Once upon a time, there were four little rabbits.
How old are you, Johnny? She asked.
16.
We few, we happy few, we band of brothers.
It was the best of times. It was the worst of times.
A wise old king once said, "Of the making of books, there is no end." How true today. Of the overabundance of writing published each year, what's worth reading? The answer is simple. Read only the best. Come join the discussion on Just the Best Literature.
Hello, everyone. Glad to have you listening in today. In case you missed last week's program, we've been discussing the book Lit Up, One Reporter, Three Schools, 24 Books That Can Change Your Life by David Denby. Now, I think this book is a captivating book, and it's what it's about how to motivate screen-loving teens to come out of their electronic world and find pleasure in reading books. Yes, paper books, with two covers and a dust jacket. Now, hopefully, you know what a book is. If you don't, books are things you find in a bookstore or at a public library, or you might order them from Amazon. Now, I'm just kidding about that. I'm sure all of you know what a book is, but some of our young teens do not. But I'll tell you, this is a great book for parents of teens, especially teens 17 to 18 years old who hate reading. The book is chock full of ideas for middle and high school literature teachers as well. Now, older teens not reading books may not seem to be a very big problem. However, Denby disagrees, and I agree with Denby. The ability to read, both the serious hard stuff and the fun stuff, is a major key for a teen's future success in life. Now, I know parents that don't agree with that. I know there are a lot of teens that don't see it that way. It is a problem. I want to give you a quote from Denby's book to kind of introduce this problem today. He writes, "As teens get older, many don't see why reading seriously should be important at all." Here's a quote that he's quoting. It says, "Everyone knows how to read and write. Why do we need a whole class for it? That is just stupid," a 15-year-old said to his teacher. So that's how that student feels. Now, another teen told Denby, he said, "Books smell like old people." Now, Denby feels that the teen's sentiment or the teen's comments, and actually both of them, it really stems from the feeling of the parents and some teachers at the high school level, even some teachers, you know, at the college level, that they feel that a liberal arts education and the humanities in particular are a waste of time. Now, here's what we mean by that. Many adults want their children to develop work skill sets from business or engineering or mathematics or science or in technology. And the reason they want their kids to be involved in those, they think those things will produce high income. And so, really, our education has become more materialistic. It's there, well, just to get a good job and just to get a good income. But there is a problem there, and here's the problem, and Denby shows us in his book, today's job market is flooded with students with these backgrounds. I mean, there's a lot of engineering students that can't find work. There's a lot of mathematics students that don't find work. There's people in science and technology that struggle to find, you know, really good jobs at high income. And so that's one part of the problem. But here's another problem that business has with the quality of, let's say, the college students that are coming out of these science programs or math programs or engineering programs. And here's another quote from the book. Denby says, "At the same time, employers have repeatedly said that they want to hire people with a good liberal arts education, people who can think, judge, express themselves. They want people who can follow complicated instructions, talk in a meeting, and understand fellow workers." Now, that's what employers want. And really, parents, you need to take Denby seriously. The developed skills of reading, thinking about, and thinking about what you're reading, then being able to clearly discuss them, that is equally important to a teen's job success. you could have your student, your teen, could be, well, maybe one of the smartest engineers, but if he can't think, if he can't communicate, if he can't really follow directions from the company, he's not going to be a success on the job. Now, my experience when I worked for Westinghouse Electric Corporation, I talked a little bit about that last week, was about that way. If you know anything about the Westinghouse Electric Corporation, now it's defunct now, but it was an engineering firm, and I was a humanities student, and I was kind of an anomaly, and one of the reasons why they hired me is they discovered that their engineering students couldn't write. They couldn't communicate. They couldn't explain to the common man what Westinghouse Electric was doing. And so I remember they brought me in, and I actually started writing administrative procedures and operating procedures and engineering procedures. And the engineering students were just appalled. They really resented that. And they said, well, who are you? I mean, you're just a lit major. How are you going to work in this company? Well, it turned out to be really successful, and I was able to communicate what they couldn't. So even here at Herbert W. Armstrong College, our students are given a liberal arts education. Our program is really quite unique. It's a work-study program, and the advantage to that is the students pay one flat fee when they come in, they work through their 2 or 4 year degree, and they leave with no debt. Now, that's really pretty exciting. Now, the college, of course, is funded by the Philadelphia Church of God, and we do see the Holy Bible as the foundation of all our education, but it's just a foundation. I mean, our students are educated in history, literature, math, music, science, and public speaking. Our students work in our construction, our publication, our landscaping, our maintenance, our television, radio, and computer information systems department. And our students also work at Imperial Academy. Now, employers seek our students because, really, they can think, judge, follow complicated instructions, and they know how to work hard. So how do we solve this teen problem of hating to read? It's interesting that Denby discovered that 12- and 13-year-olds still actually love reading. Now, parents need to really encourage these teens to keep reading. But they need to get them to read more than just the fun stuff. They need to be introduced to the hard stuff, like Charles Dickens' famous book, Great Expectations. But what about the 17- and 18-year-olds? Well, that's a little bit of a different problem, and we'll talk a little bit about that later in the program. But if you're going to have your older teen learn to read, to love reading, to enjoy reading, Denby believes that, well, parents are going to have to go back a lot further than 12 and 13 to get that 17 and 18-year-old to really love reading. It's really quite interesting. Here's another quote. And please pay attention to this, parents, especially you young parents out there that have young children. Here's a quote. He says, well, maybe not on the way home from the hospital. Maybe when the baby is 6 weeks old or when she begins smiling, that might be a good time to pull her into your lap or prop her up between you and your spouse. Turning through pages, you read aloud a picture book. Now, she won't remember the words or the pictures, but an impression of being held and read to will remain. A familiarity with the experience, the emotional reminder of pleasure, especially when it's repeated hundreds of times. And so, parents, that's when you begin to really emphasize reading with a child. On today's program, let's talk about building the love of reading into your infants and young children. If you don't have a pencil and a piece of paper close by, you may want to get them, because we're going to provide you some really practical things that you can do to help your infant and child learn to love reading. Well, to help me to do this effectively, I'm really excited to have in the studio today with me a couple of people that are going to give you some really good tips. First of all, I have Rachel Hyde. She's a stay-at-home mom with 3 children. And I also have Anita Burks. Now, Mrs. Burks is a 3rd and 4th grade teacher here at Imperial Academy. And I just might want to mention that Imperial Academy is right here on our HWAC or Herbert W. Armstrong College campus. It is K through 12. We have 57 what we call brick and mortar students, and we also have 54 IA online students. Now that's for middle school and high school. It's not the elementary grades. But we do have about a total of 111 students here, so we really have this fun program going. So I'm just going to get Rachel and Anita involved in this discussion. I'm sure you don't want to hear me for a whole half hour. So, Rachel, I just want to find out, do you agree with Denby's comments about starting a reading program so early with your kids?
Yes, definitely. I think that children will get that warm, fuzzy feeling if they're, even from a young age, they like to be held and to do something constructive while reading. It makes a lot of sense that it will just carry on until they're older children.
So what did you do with your kids? How did you go about that? I know people always want examples. Give me some examples, they say. So,
well, I think I don't remember quite so much with the children when they were younger. We always had board books, the basic books that you could get for children that will basically chew on everything. So we'd read to them board books. As they got older, obviously you want to have the books that have the alphabet in them or numbers and get them counting. One of the ones that we always had was called G is for Goat. And I just remember just it was a standard thing before they went to bed.
So did you do this with your husband or did you just do it by yourself? Did you do it together? How did you do it?
I think during the week it was mainly just me with the children before they went to bed, basically to calm them down when they were little. And then on the weekends, then my husband would read to them as well.
Good. So it's really quite interesting that I know, maybe I'll just tell everybody, Mrs. Hyde is my daughter, and those three children are my grandchildren. So I've watched this happen over the years. But I know my wife and I spent a lot of time with Rachel when she was little. I won't tell you how many years ago that was. But we had the four daughters, and I remember that what they would do with us, if we spent time with them, and we'd read the books about the same time, I'd come home from work and I'd read to them, and I'd try to put a lot of emphasis and everything. If I didn't do it, they would come to me with books, and they'd say, Dad, you know, you've got to read to us. And so I'm sure that you've probably experienced that with your children as well.
Yes, they still will want me to read to them, even though they're quite a bit older now.
Yeah, you might want
and
to tell
my
them,
husband especially. They love having him read to them.
Yeah, you might want to tell them how old your children are now.
They are 13, 11, and 8.
Yes, so they really are older children. Okay, so I want to read another quote here, and this is for Mrs. Burke's benefit. And I know we can be on a first name basis here since the class is not here, but here's another quote by Denby, and I think it's a great quote. He says, "Second part of the deal." In other words, if you're going to work with infants and children, he says, "Here's the second part of the deal. You talk to your baby constantly, from birth, telling stories, pointing out the things of the world, defining words, asking questions, and gently demanding answers when she's old enough to give them." Now, Denby is obviously talking about ramping up your reading program for kids as they get older. So in other words, I think some parents, once their infant or their toddler is out working, I mean, out really walking around and out doing things, that they can kind of get out of the reading habit. So let's get Anita involved and why is it important? If you look what Denby's talking about, he's saying, look, parents not only need to read to their kids, they need to read to their kids and talk to them. They need to be telling them stories all the time, or they need to make sure when they're reading to them, they're defining words or they're asking questions. And so I know that you really have had a great program over there of inviting the adults from around the campus in to read to the kids. So why is that so important for kids to have adults read out loud to them?
One reason, like Mrs. Hyde mentioned, it creates a bond. You have the bonding experience between the children and the adult. And the other one is, in Well, there are many, but one is it increases their vocabulary because adults can read books to the students that they might not be able to read on their own, but they can understand the books. They can listen at a higher level than they can actually read themselves. So it increases their vocabulary, which then helps in all other subjects, language and reading and spelling and all of those language arts subjects.
So reading takes more than just a, well, reading. It takes a real commitment. It's like a full-time commitment.
Yes.
And so I'm just kind of curious, my grandkids giving you any problems with reading?
Not too much. My kids are required to have 30 minutes of homework each night, and one of those subjects that they have it in is reading.
And so do they have to read to their parents? Is that the discussion?
It's their choice and the parents' choice. They can read silently or read aloud, either one. But they should be doing both, I think.
Okay. So, back to you, Rachel. If Anita sends home homework and it's reading, how do you handle that at your house?
Well, actually, with our kids, we've instilled a system where they have to read. Generally, it's around 30 minutes before they go to bed. And so with Mrs. Burks's class, a lot of times I'll have Tara split it up where she does 15 minutes of reading and 15 minutes of something else. But generally, it's before she goes to sleep. And that just enables her to calm down. We started that quite a while ago, and it's really helped the kids a lot just to kind of take it down a few notches before they're supposed to go to sleep.
So. Yeah, that's really important. Now, we brought that up in the first program. That, of course, Denby does not believe in, like, very young children reading off of a Kindle. He doesn't believe in them reading off an iPad or an iPod or off a smartphone. And the reason is, for example, if you would give that child right before bedtime, you give them an iPad and tell them to read a story, that's going to wake them up, not calm them down. But they have done these studies, and they've proven that if you read a book, there's a softer light that comes off of it. It actually is calming to the brain, and it actually can help put them to sleep. So that's a really good idea to do that. So I think it's really important. Now, we do have a little excerpt for you towards the end of this session, end of this discussion of me reading to the class. And I read two stories to them. They didn't want just one. They had to have two. And so I read Yertle the Turtle. And then I also read Gertrude McFuzz. Now, it was really interesting, and I think we'll capture in there that I tried to follow some of the things that Denby has talked about in his book. And I would stop it. I actually stopped reading, and I said, excuse me, I'm a little grovelly, and I think I need someone to read for a while. And I wanted to see how many of the students wanted to read. And how many students do you have again, Anita?
I have 11.
11 students. And I say, hey, who would like to read? 10 students put their hands up. There was only one student that said, no, I don't want to read. And so that impressed me. So what parents have to realize from all of this is if you read to your children out loud and then you encourage them to read out loud to you, they're going to get that love of reading. And it was just exciting to have 10 students say, I wanted to read. And they were like ready to wrestle each other to get up there first. And so maybe, Anita, you can, how did you foster that in those kids?
Just by what you said, excuse me, I read out loud to them and they have opportunities to read out loud in class. And then we also partner up with first and second grade and they read to each other that way as well, and they get so excited about it. And when you read out loud to them, it also teaches them how to put emphasis on words and the sentence structure. And sometimes when we read out loud together, even in science class, we do what's called popcorn reading, where one person reads aloud and then when they're finished they say popcorn and they call someone else's name. So they never really know when they're going to have to read, so that helps them to pay attention. And then things like you did, asking them, well, what do you think is going to happen next in the story? That just gets them really excited.
They seem to know. Also with Gertrude McFuzz. Now, if anybody out there doesn't know the story of Gertrude McFuzz, I really highly recommend you get the book. Because it's actually Yertle the Turtle and Other Stories. And the whole background behind this, it's really quite unique. And it really has a great lesson for them. But Gertrude is upset that she only has one tail feather. And she sees another bird has two or three tail feathers. And so that's what prompts her to go to her uncle, who's a doctor, to give her this pill that, gives her another tail feather. Well, as you might imagine, she doesn't eat just one pill. She eats every pill on the vine. And I just was curious if the students were getting it. And so I said, so what do you think is going to happen, or why is she doing this? And maybe we can play that little excerpt for you now, and you can hear the answer from the student. Then she got an idea. Now I know what I'll do. I'll grow a tail better than Lola Lee Lou. Why do we do that? People do that. Why do we do that, Megan?
Because we're jealous.
Now, I was really impressed that this student knew, well, she's just jealous. And so it was really surprising. I mean, here these are 8 and 9-year-olds, and we're reading books, and they understood the character issue. They understood that Gertrude McFuzz was a jealous person and that she was going to get in big trouble. Now, what happened, this would be a spoiler alert, so maybe I won't say. Maybe that will encourage you to get the book for your kids and read it to them. So I won't tell you what happened to Yertle, and I won't tell you what happened to Gertrude McFuzz. Maybe that will help you get the book. So I was really, really impressed with that. Now, maybe I still could, Anita, we could talk a little bit. I know you do work with parents and all that. Have you had any trouble convincing parents to maybe continue reading at home, or do they seem to be behind you? What goes on there? Have you dealt with some problems maybe? You don't have to give any names. Were you able to give parents some good tips that really help the students improve, or does it all that happen in the classroom?
Oh, no, it absolutely starts at home with the parents. And then that's the way I view it. It starts with the parents, and then we follow up. And if it's not started there, you can sometimes spark an interest, but it has to be continued at home, or that interest won't stay there.
Won't continue.
And I think most parents want their children to do well, and they want to read with them, but people are so busy. Sometimes that's a problem with them just taking the time, finding the time to do it.
Yes, yeah, so later in the book, Denby does bring that out, that it's, our society has gotten so fast-paced, and, it's like no one wants to spend any time, doing the important things, and so that is, I think that is something that we're going to deal with in the next program. We're having just 3 programs on reading, and we'll talk about that next time, things like that. But still, with my background, again, being a librarian, being an English lit educator, I believe in the importance of reading, and I know how it's helped me in my life. I mean, I didn't necessarily have the brain for like the math and the science and the engineering technology, but I did have the brain for reading and comprehension. And so I've actually been able to make a career out of that. So, and it seems like if you believe what Denby does say, and I believe it, is that that's really lacking in business today. So, okay. Well, I really appreciate you both coming in today. I think we're probably getting close on time. And so thank you for coming in. We certainly will be doing some more discussion on this next week. Just thanks for your efforts. And again, we'll just look forward to maybe inviting you back again sometime. So we're planning to have a lot more discussion on books. Remember, this is the biggest international book club you could ever belong to.
You're listening to Just the Best Literature with Dennis Leap on 101.3 KPCG.
This is Yertle the Turtle by Dr. Seuss. On the faraway island of Salamisand, Yertle the Turtle was king of the pond. A nice little pond, it was clean, it was neat. The water was warm, there was plenty to eat. The turtles had everything turtles might need. And they were all happy, quite happy indeed. They were, until Yertle, the king of them all, decided the kingdom he ruled was too small. Now, listen to what he said. He said, excuse me, "I'm ruler," said Yertle, "of all that I see, but I don't see enough. That's the trouble with me. With this stone for a throne, I look down on my pond, but I cannot look down on the places beyond." Now, "Oh, mine," Yertle cried. "Oh, the things I now rule. I'm king of a cow, I'm king of a mule, I'm king of a house, and what's more beyond that, I'm king of a blueberry bush and a cat. I'm Yertle the Turtle, oh marvelous me, for I am the ruler of all that I see." You can see his kingdom. Would you want to be ruled by Yertle the Turtle?
No! No!
"Silence," the king of the turtles barked back. "I'm king, and you're only a turtle named Matic. You stay in your place while I sit here and rule. I'm king of a cow, and I'm king of a mule. I'm king of a house, and a bush, and a cat. But that isn't all. I'll do better than that. My throne shall be higher," his royal voice thundered. "So pile up more turtles. I want about 200. Wow. Man. What about poor Mac? What's going to happen to Mac?
Oh, he's going to get squashed.
He's going to have 209 turtles on his back. He burped. And his burp shook the throne of the king.
Yay!
All right. You know what? See, my voice is getting lower. Who would like to read? Okay. Jonathan, get up here. Now, you have to read with just as much excitement. Okay? Can you just stand right here in front of me?
"And Yertle the Turtle, the king of the trees, the king of the air and the birds and the bees, the king of the house and a cow and a mule. Well, that was the end of the turtle king's rule. For Yertle, the king of all Salamisand, fell off his high throne and fell plunk on the pond."
Yay!
Good job. Okay. Yay! Okay, Katie, would you like to read? Come over here, Katie.
"And today the great Yertle, that marvelous he, is king of the mud. That is all he can see. And the turtles, of course, all the turtles are free, as turtles and maybe all creatures should be."
Good Yay! Job. That was it. That was the end of the book. I'm really sorry. Oh, well, you want to read another funny thing?
Yes.
Okay. You want to read another story?
Yes.
You want to read another story?
Yes.
I'm not ready. Okay, Spencer, get up here. Come on. You can start. Maybe let's come back here and say the title of the story.
Gertrude McFuzz. There once was a girl bird named Gertrude McFuzz, and she had the smallest plain tail there ever was. One droopy, droopy feather, that's all that she had. Oh, and oh, that one father made Gucci so sad. For there was another young bird that she knew, a fancy young birdie named Lo-Lo-Lee-Lo. And instead of one feather behind, she had two. Poor Gertrude, even she happened to spy Miss Lo-Lo-Lee-Lo. Flying by in the sky, she got very jealous. She frowned and she pouted. Then one day got Then one day she got awfully mad and she shouted, "This just isn't fair. I have one. She has two. I must have a tail just like Lola Lee Lou."
Okay, good job. Okay, who else wants to read? Okay, Tara. Come up here. Do you know this story? Oh, you do? Okay, good. So you start right here and read really loud.
So she flew to her uncle, a doctor named Dake, whose office was high in a tree by a lake. And she cried, "Uncle Doctor, oh please do you know if some kind of a pill that would make my tail grow?" "Tut, tut," said the doctor. Such talk. How absurd. Your tail is just right for a kind of a bird."
For your kind of bird. Okay. Let me read a little bit more. And then I'll get some more in here. Okay. Then Gertrude had tantrums. She raised such a din that finally her uncle, the doctor, gave in. And he told her just where she could find such a pill. And on a pillberry vine on the top of the hill. "Oh, thank you," chirped Gertrude McFuzz, and she flew right straight to the hill where the pillberry grew. Yes, there was the vine, and as soon as she saw it, she plucked off a berry. She started to gnaw it. It tasted just awful. Almost made her sick, but she wanted that tail, so she swallowed it quick. Then she felt something happen. She felt a small twitch, as if she had been tapped down behind by a switch, and Gertrude looked around and she cheered. It was true, two feathers, exactly like Lola Lee Lou. Then she got an idea. "Now I know what I'll do. I'll grow a tail better than Lola Lee Lou." Why do we do that? People do that. Why do we do that, Megan?
Because we're jealous.
Wow. Good job. You must have a good Bible class. Okay, who else wants to read now? Okay, let's come up here, Caitlin.
"These pills that grow feathers are working just fine," so she nibbled another one off of the vine. She felt a new twitch, and then Gertrude yelled, "Whee! Miss Lola has only just two. I have three!" When Lola Lulu sees this beautiful stuff, she'll fall right down flat on her face, sure enough. "I'll show her who's pretty. I certainly will. Why, I'll make my tail even prettier still."
All right, is this fun?
Yes!
So you like people to read to you, right?
Yes!
But you like to read to people, don't you?
Yes!
Yeah, it's fun. Okay. You can come up here and you can start there.
"Then the feathers popped out with a zing, and then they blossomed like flowers that bloom in the spring. All fit for a queen. What a sight to behold. They sparkled like diamonds and gumdrops and gold. Like silk, like spaghetti, like satin, like lace. They burst out like rockets all over the place. They waved in the air and they swished in the breeze, and some were as long as the branches of trees. And still they kept growing. They popped and they popped until long about sundown when they stopped."
When finally they stopped.
"And finally they stopped.
And now," giggled Gertrude, "the next thing to do is to fly right straight home and show Lola Lee Lou. And when Lola sees these, why, her face will get red, and she'll let out a scream, and she'll fall right down dead." Do you think that's a good attitude?
No!
And all through the night, she was stuck on that hill, and Gertrude McFuzz might be stuck up there still if her good Uncle Dake hadn't heard the girl yelp. He rushed to her rescue and brought along help. There you go, right there.
"To lift Gertrude up almost broke all their beaks, and to fly her back home it took almost 2 weeks, and then it took almost another week more to pull out those feathers. My, Gertrude was sore."
Good job. Okay, here's the conclusion. Who wants to read the very conclusion?
And
read it with drama.
"And finally, when all the pulling was done, Gertrude behind her again had just one. That one little feather she had, a starter. But now that's enough.
because now she's smarter.
Yay! All right. All right, good job, students.
You're listening to Just the Best Literature with Dennis Leap on 101.3 KPCG.
Now, parents, I do want you to feel like you can write in and ask questions, and you can certainly get some more help. We really can't do as much as we need to do in a half-hour program. But if you'd like to write me an email, you can do that at jbl@pcog.org. And that's just all small letters, jbl@pcog.org. And if you write in, I will get back to you, maybe not immediately, but we'll get back to you. And some of them we will read on the program. You can also follow Just the Best Literature on Twitter. And the address for that is at, and I think all of you probably know what that is, at JBLiterature1. And you can check there. I will be giving announcements. We'll be talking about kind of books you can have for your children. So we'll have all kinds of things posted on that. And I also want to just encourage you and just realize that getting children to really love reading is not the easy thing. Here's what Denby says about this whole thing. He said, "Everyone agrees that establishing reading pleasure early in a child's life is a monumental achievement. And you do it, the pediatricians say, with books and not with screens." So we talked about that in our first program. The whole idea behind Just the Best Literature is to get people to turn off their television, to shut down their iPads, to get off their iPods, get off their Kindles and actually read a book. Get in there and feel the pages and smell the paper. And to me, books don't smell like old people. They smell like good things. But he also goes on there and says, "And everyone agrees the gap between those children who grow up loving books and active conversation and those who don't, with troubled school performance and restricted career opportunities likely for those who don't. It is a gap that gets set early and may be hard to close." That's how Denby quotes his book. Now, it is hard, parents, but it's not impossible. And you can really have an impact on your child, especially in grade school and the middle school. And I think our success at Imperial Academy is a testament to that fact. But here's another question that Denby asks. He says, "Is it still possible to raise teenagers who can't live without reading something good, or is the idea absurd?" Well, we gave you some tips on how to help your younger teenager in last week's program. Today, we talked about how you can help your infant. And we've reserved the most important key to help your older teenager for next week's program. So sorry, we've run out of time for today's program. Tune in next week, and we're going to talk about the important key for getting your older teens into reading. Remember, if you have any questions or comments for me, you can email me at jbl@pcog.org. You can follow JBL on Twitter at JBLiterature1. You can look for special announcements. You can look for book and author information on Twitter as well. And don't forget to start reading The Old Man and the Sea by Ernest Hemingway. We're going to be starting our discussion on that book in a few weeks. So thank you for joining me today. Until next time, remember, keep reading.
You've been listening to Just the Best Literature on Trumpet Radio, 101.3 KPCG, streaming online at kpcg.fm and thetrumpet.com.